welcome everybody to episode 87 of High Tech on the Low. Ian, how are you this morning?
I'm pretty good. How you doing?
We have a comeback guest this morning with Ian Sanders, CEO of Blue Cape. So very excited to have you back and to keep on exploring the journey that you're on. And as always, we are sponsored by Front Team with 12 different communities, 6 verticals, and 3,000 members all looking to connect. And if you like what you hear today, please subscribe, follow, like, do all the rest on all the platforms that we're on. And, you know, Ian, what I really love about actually our returned talks, basically, other than they're awesome and it's a cool excuse to see you, is, you know, it's really like fun to see the development of a startup, you know, with you. You know, we started already, I think it was almost a year ago now at time. No, actually over a year ago with kind of you, and you were still in stealth mode. And we talked about the importance of why you would even choose stealth mode over other things. And then about 6 months later, we came back and we saw that you had kind of come out of stealth mode, not entirely, but came back and, you know, we're kind of getting your, I would say, your boots together, you know, getting your feet under you a little bit. And now I'm really excited to talk because I feel like we've, you know, obviously we've kept in touch and I know a little bit more and we're going to get into that. But, you know, it's a really cool experience. So now we're going to see kind of where you've been able to progress another 6 months on. And now you're fully out of stealth mode and kind of all the stuff coming from there. And you've even made some changes from what I've understand. So really excited. Ian, just give a brief explanation of who you are again for the people at home if they don't remember. And we'll get into it.
Yeah, so I'm Ian Sanders. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Blue Cape. So basically what we do in short is we're able to generate data on the risk from respiratory diseases like COVID-19 and influenza. And then we serve that through a cloud-based API.
Very cool. Very cool. And so basically what that means in, like, you know, just like in small people language, right, is that basically you're able to help kind of map a geographic location and understand kind of what's the rate of viral spread or kind of also like what's the frequency of it infecting people. What is it, you know, in that sense?
Yeah, so listen, so every single disease that we're currently mapping, it's done with certain golden standards or certain metrics. So yet again, we can define it as viral spread. We could define it as inherent risk. There's a lot of different ways that it's defined. It really depends on the disease that we're currently defining over the given geographic area.
Cool. And you guys are focused on respiratory.
And we're focused now on respiratory, first on viral, and then we'll be moving on to also to non-viral.
Very cool. Very cool. And like, what's say, like, you know, why, you know, I'll just ask the obvious question, why you guys, like, why isn't like the CDC doing this, you know, or I don't know, the WHO, you know?
So it's actually so funny you're saying this, because this is actually one of the original reasons why I even started Blue Cape to begin with. So I saw the massive failure of certain organizations in order to provide real-time or even very precise data on the risk from these types of diseases like COVID in particular, but sure, later on influenza, RSV, even non-viral, COPD.
Sure.
These viruses have a very significant cost, not even on, let's say, the day-to-day person, sure, immunocompromised pulmonary populations. Right. But even on large-scale industries, which we'll go into a little bit later.
Yeah,
we need to be able to provide this data. People need data in order to even assess a given risk.
Very cool.
And we need to be able to provide that.
I mean, I think that's very useful. Obviously, we've seen how the pandemic affected the world, which was, you know, what it was. But, you know, I think it's very cool what you're trying to do in that sense of trying to now apply it, you know, past the pandemic. Because I think a lot of people also, you know, they say, oh, pandemic, we got to do, you know, a million things to save the world. But it's like, wait. This is happening all the time. You know, it's not just during a pandemic. So very unique. Now, I want to kind of, you know, go to where you are right now in the process. Because as I said about, you know, over a year ago, you were in stealth mode. You know, we couldn't even say your company's name on the show, right? And now we're saying it openly, Blue Cape. You guys have made some real headway with some major government institutions. And you guys have made some, you know, major headway with also some major institutional partners. And so we can kind of talk about that. I'd love to first hear kind of, you know, what has happened, let's say, in the last little bit in a summarized fashion, right? Remember, we still have to get to some other questions.
No, absolutely, right. 100%. So first and foremost, we pivoted the company. So I think the last time we were talking, and we'll talk also about that, how to even do such a pivot, we were focused on a completely and totally different industry.
Were you focused on?
We were focused primarily on providing the data for Fortune 500 companies and for a number of specific use cases that were more on the consumer side and less on the, I'd like to call it, the analytics side.
Okay. So what is the pivot now?
And the pivot was, the pivot is to insurance in particular, life and health insurance, reinsurance. We won't go too much into that because I can't go into specific use cases, but sure, there's some interesting things going on in that given space.
But did you choose insurance because you just thought it would be a better play, or you actually had, let's say, some feedback from people in the insurance industry?
Really? Absolutely. So this is something very important. And I actually write about this in Post and LinkedIn about how early stage founders even find traction.
Sure.
Not talking, you know, from some books I've read. Of course, there are some certain books I read, but actually getting punched in the face multiple times. That's basically how I define sometimes being an early stage startup founder, the ones that have to really go through really hard times and difficulties.
100%.
Getting punched in the face multiple times until finally realizing you know, what you need to do in the end of the day. The original thesis, not even the original thesis, the thesis 6 months ago was to target Fortune 500 companies with certain consumer products. We took that idea from other companies that we saw that went into the space, and they did quite well for themselves.
Very logical. You're looking at your competition and saying, hey, let's try to move similarly.
Yeah, that did not work.
Right, okay.
That, that got punched in the face. Right. Got punched in the face before a couple of times. And then you go into the classical, I like to call this rule of five.
Okay.
So rule of five basically goes like the following. I will go to five experts in the given field industry that I want to go into. And if three out of the five experts that I talk to about what I'm trying to do and about my idea, and maybe we try to brainstorm together about use cases, if they tell me that's actually a good idea, you might have something.
Right.
Further validate.
Right.
If three out of the five of them tell you you don't know what you're talking about,
don't move.
Don't get out. Yeah. You don't have enough time. Right. Go away. Leave that industry. You don't know what you're talking about. Your thesis is incorrect. Go somewhere else.
That's a very smart way of going about it, actually. I'll say, you know, just from like a outsider's perspective, right? You know, actually taking that second and saying like, okay, if enough experts in the field, people who I consider experts, who are also in the sense in their own objective life are considered experts, tell me yay or nay, like don't think you're smarter than them. Like they might actually know.
You really are not. To be completely honest. Right. Yeah. So any startup founder who thinks he's smarter than the people that are working in the industry, even if you do think you are smarter than those people, guess what? A lot of those people, they're usually the decision makers. And they usually decide what the industry is going to do. So if all of them together basically tell you that's a horrible idea, don't do that in a specific industry that you're targeting.
Sure.
Be wary.
So basically, you talk to these experts in insurance and they say, hey, this would be a great play in the insurance field. Is that what happened?
Yes. They would say, we would talk to people that are experts on, you know, in general, dealing with these types of data points. We asked them about use cases. We asked them about what they think. And they told us unanimously. Actually, we've now talked to over 13 experts at this point. They all say it's valuable. Wow. Every single one.
So this was actually like a pretty big change. I mean, this is not just like a small little, you know, oh, we're going to, instead of doing this feature, we're doing this feature. This is like a whole business model that you say that you changed, right? How was that? I mean, that can't be an easy thing to just do tomorrow, you know, changing your whole business strategy.
You got to do it in the end of the day. Listen, in the end of the day, there are things on the line and you do whatever you need to do in order to win.
But how did it make you feel? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it's like you're kind of having to go back to the drawing board.
You have to do that. There's nothing to do about it. You know, actually, this actually reminds me of a great story about so even recently, I was actually at an Icon event.
Okay.
For, you know, founders learning how to exit and pivot.
Sure.
And I believe the company was called SIBO. I think the company was called SIBO.
Okay.
So the founder there, very smart guy, very respectable person. They took already $20 million. If I'm not mistaken, they were called SIBO.
Sure.
They realized that what they were targeting was completely and totally wrong. And this is years and years of working and effort. Tens of millions of dollars being invested of other investors' money. And they realized that they're not going to get to the level of growth that they're going to be able to then say, I'm taking us to IPO or exit. I can justify the money I'm taking.
Okay.
They completely pivoted the company. They took another funding round. They pivoted the company. And then eventually they sold the company for a very significant sum of money. But that's the point. That's the point in general is if you see, you know, this is like goes from there's a famous line from Sun. I'm going to butcher this a little bit.
Sure.
This is not what he said. This is not what he said exactly. So I'm going to butcher this a little bit.
We will not hold you to it.
Yeah, it's Sun Tzu, please. I apologize. I'm a student of your works. But, you know, you got to, you know.
I'm sure he'll forgive you.
You forgive me in the afterlife. You can forgive me. I'm joking around. But basically, it's don't look for the path of resistance to victory.
Right.
Look for the easiest path.
Uh-huh.
When you just like in anything, right? When you're in the military, you know, even we'll talk about it, you know, as a, you know, I have a little bit of understanding of how you flank somebody or how to, what's it called, get in a firefight.
Right.
Right. You don't go and charge somebody straight up. Okay?
Right.
You're going to die if you do something.
Right. You
like
go
that.
Around.
Exactly.
No, so it's kind of funny because in a sense, you know, there's almost something illogical about that, right? Because like the hardest thing in my mind, I'm just saying it as an outsider, would be to change my whole model, right? That I'm sitting there, you know, let's say you've been working on it for 6 months, maybe even a year, right? You have this whole idea, and then all of a sudden, you know, in maybe the span of a week, maybe less, you know, you're like, I have to change my whole model. I have to make a very major shift in my mindset, in my company's trajectory. I mean, it's very hard. It almost seems like that is the resistance. No?
It is the resistance, but it's understanding that us staying, you know, it's like, and I'm going to use a wartime analogy. That's like saying, if we stay here now, we're all going to be killed, right? Or we're going to come up, we're going to left flank, and we're going to do X, Y, and Z in order to make sure that we can, in the end of the day, we can take the next building or take the next house.
Sure.
For example. That's what needs to be done.
Sometimes you might lose people along the way.
And we'll talk about that too. Sometimes you might lose people along the way. But in the end of the day, the path to taking your objectives has to be very clear. Because at the end of the day, listen, you know, just as my objectives beyond even on the I'd like to call it on the professional field. Even there's a lot of things that are on the line. When there are a lot of things that are on the line, beyond investors' money,
right,
beyond your personal life, beyond everything else, you need to do whatever is necessary in order to win.
I agree. And I think that's actually a very plain good simple founder's mindset, to be honest. Always have in mind. You know, it's kind of like be humble in a sense, learn from your mistakes, but be ready to adapt and be ready to win. Now, we're going to go down a certain line right now because you got me a little concerned, right? You know, you said you lost people along the way. So I'm wondering, you know, I hope it wasn't too serious. No, but I'm joking. You know, I'd like to understand, you know, you mentioned that. What did you lose part of your team along the way? You know, did, you know, a partner leave? What happened?
Yeah, so my current, now he's no longer my current, but the CTO that I had recently right now, he unfortunately had to leave. We weren't able. Mm. Now things are forming very well and deals are forming and it's very exciting. And we understand exactly what is the sweet spot for this type of a product.
Okay.
And how our go-to-market strategy and how we've already set ourselves up for the next, hopefully the next 3 to 4 years of how to completely take our markets, for example. But unfortunately, we weren't able, I'd like to call it, to get there in time.
Okay.
We understand that. Had to leave. We brought in a new CTO, amazing fit as well. He's a phenomenal guy.
Okay.
Very happy with him.
Very cool.
Congrats
on that. That's difficult.
It was that. And even the former CTO right now, we're still in very well connections, and I'm going to probably bring him back at some point because he's really a phenomenal guy.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, one of my questions here in a sense is why did he have to leave? You know, you mentioned that it was a timing thing, right? But it's like, was it more that, you know, like you guys just, you know, he couldn't survive, or was it that he didn't find the product, you know, he didn't believe in it anymore?
Oh, no, he completely believed in the product.
Okay.
He completely believed in the product, he completely believed in what we're doing. This goes to more of the idea of responsibility, and I'll go a little bit into that. And this is also why, you know, I like to call it young entrepreneurs, or especially, I'll talk from my own experience. Me as a young entrepreneur, I decided to go on this journey at a much, I like to call it, younger date than maybe opposed to other entrepreneurs.
Sure.
When you take on a wife, you take on kids, you take on responsibilities in the end of the day.
Right.
And those are your first and foremost responsibilities.
Right.
No matter what. Full stop, period. So that person in particular, because we're right now, I would call it 2 or 3 months away to finishing up everything and really, I'd like to call it making the major breakthrough, it still wasn't fast enough for this person because in the end of the day, he has to put food on the table.
So that's just a reality. It's kind of, it is what it is.
It is what it is. It is what it is.
Wow. That's, you know, that's like a really, I feel like it's a really real thing that you're bringing up right now, because it's sometimes it's overlooked, I think, a lot, especially in venture building and maybe in entrepreneurship in general, is that, you know, I always like to say you have these Instagram, you know, accounts, or you have these LinkedIn posts, you know, oh, you got to work all this time, got to put in all this energy, you know, 9 to 10, 20, 30, you know, all these hours. And at the end of the day, it's kind of saying, you know, you make a very good point. Like life. There are life considerations that have to be made sometimes, you know, whether it's your health, your family's health, your family just in general, you know, maybe other things about you personally. It's very real. And it's something that sometimes we don't always talk about in startups and venture building, which is this whole idea of like, how are you, right? You know, how are you building? And you make a good point. Listen, young guy, maybe you don't have a lot of responsibilities, don't have a wife, don't have kids. You can take things on that, let's say, a guy who's older may not be able to, because he does have to provide. He does have to pay the bills at the end of the day that maybe you don't have. And I think that's very real. Now, how was it, you know, kind of broaching that conversation with him?
we broached the conversation. He, first and foremost, he broached the conversation with me that if we, you know, we can't get the X, Y, and Z, then he's going to have to, even though he completely believes in the product, he can't put his, you know, his mortgage and his wife and his kids on the line. I completely understood. I told him absolutely.
Yeah.
I was going to try to help him out in any way I could.
Sure.
But, you know, there's only so much that I can do. But yet again, what I am very happy is that we ended extremely well.
Okay.
He's a massive believer in
that's
the company.
That's a plus. That's
a major plus. Yes, it's a major plus in front of me and in front of current investors, where they understand that here is a CTO, here is a co-founder who worked with me, who really, we had a great time working together.
Sure.
We have a very good, you know, working relationship. And this is somebody who I, even beyond that, I plan on bringing him back at some point into my company.
That's awesome.
If I can. If he will come in, I will be very happy to bring him back.
Right, right. Of course. It has to be, you know, mutual, yeah, whatever. Everything has to be, hopefully, you know, when that time comes, everything is set up in the right way where he can come in, right?
Yeah. But I do want to actually go on to a specific point that you talked about. You know, without a doubt, 100%, when you have a wife and kids, it is very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But also the path of building on these types of companies, I felt in myself,
sure,
that it is a very, very lonely path. I mean, we all have to deal with certain difficulties. I, you know, thank God, even now, I think I just told you recently, right now, I just got into a recent warm relationship,
yeah,
as well.
Very
She's
cool.
in the United States right now, but you know,
good reason to travel.
It's
get
good,
more
good reason, without a doubt. It's a good,
right?
Yeah, but it's a hard life. It's a hard life. At the end of the day, it's a hard and lonely life. And there are certain advantages of doing that when you already have your wife and your kids, and you have that emotional support.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the massive disadvantage, of course, that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you screw things up, and
right,
other people are going to pay for it.
Right.
On the flip side, it's a very lonely life starting it as a young entrepreneur, but yet again, if you're able to do it and you're able to find that balance,
right,
it's really an enjoyable journey.
You make a good point. Also, like at the end of the day, listen, sometimes, you know, as a young guy, for example, sweat equity can work for you, right? Because you don't have tons of, responsibilities. You just have to make sure that you're getting food at the end of the day, right? Sweat equity for some other guy, you know, may not work. You might have, you know, two other mouths relying on him. So, you know, it's definitely a thing. You know, I think that's very cool, though, that you were able to end well with him. I sometimes feel that, you know, sometimes in these founder breakups or whatever, you can see a lot of animosity, and, you know, things get kind of weird between people because of, as you said, a lot of things are on the line, maybe beyond just you know, the company, but also personally. So I think it's really cool that you're able to do that. Now I want to kind of switch topics a little bit from the person. I want to kind of talk about, you know, the world of insurance as you see it right now, because it's very interesting. You know, you made a play, you shifted your model, moved away from the Fortune 500 consumer side and kind of also like the consumer side of things, right? And now you're in the insurance, you know, world, which is, you know, a lot of people think probably boring. A lot of people think, you know, not interesting, but yet it's a really strong play for you. So I want to understand kind of, you know, what was the thinking behind getting into insurance, and why do you think insurance is kind of this next big play for Blue Cape?
So getting into insurance, to be completely honest, was just throwing, I like to call it this way as well, okay? Because there is a certain logic to how I go and pivot the company.
For sure,
right?
I would imagine.
You're dealing with risks, so we have to figure, okay, who else deals with risks?
Right.
The insurance industry, or who else deals with dealing with risk, providing this product as a consumer product for immunocompromised public. So in the end of the day, you're dealing with risk, so that was a natural thing. But
sure.
But in reality, to make it very clear, In these types of stages of companies where you make a pivot, it's basically like throwing spaghetti on the wall, seeing what sticks, and praying to God that what sticks is actually extremely valuable. That's basically the logic. That's in the beginning, and then keep on building, and then seeing if you can iterate and reiterate and reiterate and build and build and build until you have something of a really monumental stature.
Nice.
What I would say when it came specifically to the insurance industry, yet again, I can't go too much into detail.
That's okay.
Can't go too much
into detail. No, but listen, you know, at the end of the day, you can go into some, because, you know, to me, it just seems that, like, you know, listen, Fortune 500 insurance, they have similar interests, but it's very different.
Well, I'll give a general example. All right. Currently, right now, when COVID becomes endemic in the United States, we're going to be seeing anywhere between 100,000 up to 250,000 deaths per year. That's
okay.
John Hopkins. 35,000 to 50,000 deaths from influenza per year in the U.S. That's a 10-year running average from the CDC.
Okay.
So let's say that's an upward threshold of 300,000 deaths per year.
Just COVID.
That's an upward threshold, right?
Right.
If you want to include COPD, RSV, you're looking at a numbers already in the maybe close to the 500,000. To put that in perspective, heart disease and cancer, those are two of America's largest killers. It's 550,000 deaths per year.
Wow.
Even at 100,000 deaths per year from COVID-19, we estimate losses at $82 billion in direct healthcare costs.
Wow.
That doesn't include a lot of other factors like worker compensation, life insurance payouts. In the end of the day, it's a lot of money. That's it.
And so that was like, you basically just saw it. You were like, this is a massive problem and no one's addressing it.
This is a massive problem which needs to be addressed with the latest technology, because currently right now, there isn't a proper way to address certain aspects of this issue.
Wow. That's real. I mean, you know, that's like something that's like very, you know, first of all, it's concerning, right? You know, it's concerning that no one's dealing with it. It's very good that you are. But, you know, it's like, it's very concerning that no one's actually dealing with it, because, you know, even just now, I was just kind of doing the math in my mind. I was thinking like, wow, even just the flu and COVID, it's like 0.1% of the population is going to die every year, basically, from the fact that they're just not, you know, that we don't know what's going on. And that's crazy. That's crazy. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a crazy move. So it's very cool that you're able to integrate into, or at least are going to try to integrate into, you know, insurance companies or the insurtech, you know, space. I do want to ask you one question, which is kind of like, right now, you know, you've probably, you know, in the last 6 months, you've done a lot, right? You've had team changes, you've had business plan changes, everything's changed, right? What are some of the, like, the big highlights for you in the last little bit? You know, some of the good, some of the actually accolades that you could talk about.
So the accolades, well, like, I can't go into specifics, but you already know some of the accolades when it comes to deals that are now moving forward finally, and we're now finally starting to get to actual, you know, we're about to get to things of real negotiations and actually signing things.
That's cool.
Which is extremely exciting.
Yeah.
A lot of validation.
And you can't tell us any names?
I can't tell you anything else. Okay. A lot of validation. Another 6 months, we will, maybe in another 2 or 3 months, I'll probably post about it.
Okay, okay. Well, that'll be cool. Yeah, that'll be an exciting update.
I'll post about these things that are happening. A lot of validation from a large, which you've seen from some, or, you know, governmental organizations on the technology and the potential of what we're currently doing in the space.
Kind of like affirming that you guys are actually a good solution.
Yes. And affirming that we are a completely and totally new way of doing a certain analysis that's never been done before, which is huge. Very exciting. Mm-hmm. And general, I told you, my personal life, which is, you know, I'll even go a little bit more into that. The entire role, you know, beyond the fact that, of course, you want to save the world. And this is an important factor of, we like to call it, this is the only type of data point where health and environment really come together.
Sure.
I'll put it that way. Sure. But, you know, I started this company at the end of the day, you know, in reality for my future wife and kids. So for me, you know,
amen,
the relationship, which it seems to be a very warm relationship.
Good.
It's a very kind of... justifying the sacrifices that we make for the future.
Amen. That's good. That's good. That needs to be on a freaking t-shirt or something like that.
I will. Know? Don't worry, Jordan. This is the next business, man.
I'm telling
this
you.
This is the next business.
That's good. We'll just do, you know, we'll do like AI, I don't know, like good slogan, you know, generation or something like that, right?
You got an AI right here, man.
Yeah, that's right.
You got the AI right here.
There you go. So you know, I want to kind of, you know, finish up the interview with you a little bit about what do you see for the next 6 months, right? You know, I understand life happens. I understand teams change. We don't know a lot of things. A lot of things are out of our control. We can all agree on that. But what do you see in the next 6 months, you know, when we come and talk to you? What's your goal?
So I think we'll have our first deals already signed and finished. Our collaborations and partnerships will be signed and finished. Beyond that as well, the team will expand significantly.
Good.
And I think we'll be done with our funding round finally.
Wow. Awesome. Well, that'd be huge. That's been ongoing, I think, even since we first started.
Yeah. It's been an iteration back and forth. Just so any of the founders think you're hypothetically, all right? It's a long and painful process. You're not going to probably get money in the first 2 or 3 months. Don't expect to ever say, oh, you deserve money. Nobody deserves money. The only thing you need to show is results. Just show results.
That's great. That's great. You know, and it's great because you actually, I always
it's
try
another
to
slogan,
end.
Jordan. It's another slogan.
Well, I was going to say, not even another slogan, but I always like to end the show on what your advice for entrepreneurs. I think you just gave the best one there, which is like, don't ever think that you deserve money. Work hard for it. And, you know, go in and actually fight, as you said before, even for your money, because you need to prove it and you need to get there. And that's real.
Yep.
So listen, Ian, I always enjoy talking to you. I wish you the best as you go forward in, you know, kind of the next 6 months. We're going to obviously catch up in another 6 months and see where you're at. And, you know, just good luck, man. Keep on the journey.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on, man. It's going to be very exciting to really, you know, check back with you in 6 months from now.
Amazing. Thanks, Ian.
Yeah.